Teddy Gellman in a mid-quadri in the cage. Blue Hen Sports Cage, Thursdays, 5 to 7 p.m. right here, 91.3 WVUD, our big stories. First off, in tennis, Wimbledon, we're heading into the finals, and Venus Williams is going there once again with the victory yesterday. Venus onto the finals, and for the men's, a really good matchup between Federer and Nadal. Federer is going to move on there. Djokovic, Murray, number one and two, both out. And the finals for both the men's and women's singles in Wimbledon over these next couple days.
The rookie rises. Aaron Judge won the Home Run Derby on Monday. What a good showing outing it was. We all picked him. And 23 first-round bombs. Aaron Judge is the real deal.
Now, you told me you really like the format with the All-Star, with the Home Run Derby,
yes,
with the number one seed versus 8, 2, 7, etc. So, Judge faced off, Judge was number two, Giancarlo Stanton was number one. Aaron Judge, number two, he faced off against Marlins player Justin Bour. And Justin Bour was out there crushing balls. He was 15, 17, 18, he surpassed 20. And everybody's looking on the side of the field because Aaron Judge is about to come up next. And if you hit two home runs past, I believe, 450 feet or something like that, you get 30 seconds extra in time. Justin Bour got it. He hit a couple home runs. So Aaron Judge comes out there, and he is absolutely smashing them. And Justin Bour, who hit the most amount of home runs in a round besides Aaron Judge, got knocked out in the first round because of how many the Judge hit.
Yeah, that's just one of those unlucky seeding type situations. I think it happened a few years in the three-point contest, and they also were going head-to-head there, but... three 500 feet home runs by Aaron Judge is absolutely ridiculous. I think it's been done one time before ever, and he did it three times in one home run derby, which is absolutely phenomenal. So again, I shout out to the other guys, but Aaron Judge really just stole the show.
He did, and Cody Bellinger had a nice home run derby. Give him some credit, the rookie from the Dodgers, who at this point you got to say Judge is going to win the AL home run or the AL Rookie of the Year, probably Bellinger in the NL if both of them continue what they're doing. There's not really anybody approaching them. Cody Bellinger had a nice home run derby. How about Sano from the Twins? Sano had a nice home run derby, and a lot of people didn't know about him from the Twins, not a team that's very competitive at this point. And Giancarlo Stanton knocked out in the first round, so the hometown favorite didn't do much. He got out in the first round. Now, they'll say excuses that the Marlins got in at 3 a.m. the previous day, et cetera, et cetera. But Aaron Judge overwhelmingly took the show at the Home Run Derby and during the All-Star game. Not as much from him, but, you know, looking at what he's been doing, because he's setting a lot of records across the board in terms of the 30 home runs that he put up in the first half with the Yankees, RBIs, et cetera, and how he's proving to be this player for the Yankees. And, you know, talking to some other people, I don't think that everybody really has bought into what Judge is doing at this point. And now he's still, we're halfway through the season. First off, do you think that this is a sustainable pace, what this guy is doing? Do you think he's the real deal? Do you believe in Aaron Judge in the second half?
I do. I think that he'll be all right. He is playing for a very storied franchise like the Yankees, so the pressure is always going to be there on him. I think what he's doing is remarkable, but for him, I don't think that he's overexerting himself so crazy. I mean, he does most of his damage, obviously, with the home runs, but he's out there in the outfield. He's not, you know, shortstop, third base, you know, first base. He's not, you know, really putting that much miles on his body. So Yankees have been very smart with what they've been doing with him, and he's been very smart himself. Again, he's 25 years old, so he's not, like, super young. You can't say he's a kid, but a guy that's kind of about to reach his prime. So it's one of those things. I think he knows exactly what he needs to do and what he has to do for this team to be successful. And I look at it, you use the term rookie a lot, first-year guy, but this guy is, you know, at 25, 26, almost 26 years old, he's not a rookie at all by any means.
Well, he's older than Bryce Harper.
Exactly, yeah.
Take that for example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, the guy's been in the minors, and he came up. And
great body of work and just everything included.
And what they were talking about during the All-Star game is that the past season when he got called up, there was a lot of reaching out over the plate. There wasn't plate discipline, and simply changing his approach has led to what he's been able to do. And with the Yankees, they also have Gary Sanchez, who is in the Home Run Derby in a decent lineup. So the Yankees battling out there in the AL East. Now the Red Sox have been really good Where do you think he stands? Is it too crazy to say face a new face of baseball, or are we still looking
at... It is crazy. I think it is.
Okay, so are you still in the mindset of, and I agree with you, I do think it's, just to pose the question, that this is a Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Clayton Kershaw, those are the guys that we should be looking at?
I don't have a problem with people giving him that number one, he's the best player in baseball, sure, and I think people have a tough time doing that when someone busts on the scene. They're like, whoa, calm down. It's one of those things, well, what are you waiting for? He's showing you everything he needs to show you. But am I ready to give him that you know, Jerry West equivalent logo? No, he's not the face of that sport. No, he isn't yet. I'm sorry. He's really only in his first year. Doesn't have that many games under his belt. You know, give him you also have to see if you can have this consistency moving forward, but he's not the face of baseball. He's not the guy. I'd rather put Kershaw or even Bryce Harper up there for that matter, but give him a little bit of time, see what he can do. I want to see a little bit in the postseason. These are where players are made. This is where names are made in the postseason, so see what he can do there. If you want to say he's the number one player in baseball, sure, I have no problem with that. I would have to say he's the number one guy in baseball right now. I'm not going to make him the face of the MLB right now.
Yeah, very well said. You look around other sports, a rookie such as Connor McDavid in hockey from the Edmonton Oilers, sensational season, but you're still looking at somebody like Sidney Crosby, Ovechkin debatable based on what he's done the last couple of years, but you look up there and there's still guys, and you look in the NFL, okay, Dak Prescott had a sensational rookie year that was not expected. Did anybody expect that from Prescott? Did anybody expect this from Judge? No, but are you looking at Dak Prescott right now as one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL? No.
Yeah.
You're not doing that. You're looking at him as, at this point, sure, he's a starter, and Aaron Judge is going to play a big role in what the Yankees do.
It's give him Rookie of the Year, but is he your MVP? Is he really your most valuable? You don't know what valuable is. He's been in there for a year, you know?
Well, that's the kind of going to become a conversation, because in the American League right now, I mean, you saw the whether you watched the All-Star game or not, I'm sure you saw the starting lineup, and a lot of the guys in there, I'm not calling them no names, but you will not hear somebody like Justin Smoke in the running for most valuable player. You just won't. There's only a couple names right now that are even in that conversation, and I know it's very early. We're in July, and we're not talking about MVPs for baseball till the end of October when the season is over, but Chris Sale pitching for the Red Sox and Aaron Judge batting for the Yankees, in my opinion, have got to be up there right now when you look in the NL, and you got a couple pitchers in Scherzer and Kershaw, and maybe you got a little bit more variety with Bryce Harper and Murphy, Votto, Goldschmidt, some different guys. But, you know, Amid, that's kind of tricky, because is he the MVP? Well, right now he kind of is. Wimbledon, men's first. We saw a couple really good matches so far, and some unfortunate matches, such as Novak Djokovic, number two player in the world, who had to back out of his match because of an injury. Andy Murray ousted by number 24, Query, and Federer still hanging on. So number one and two, Murray, Djokovic, both gone. Federer still in, and Nadal out as well. So at this point, Amid, you're really looking at Roger Federer, the possible favorite moving forward based on what he's been able to do. But some real quality matches so far, especially the one Rafael Nadal when he lost in the round of 16 to Mueller.
Yeah, what a thriller that was. And you talk about Federer listed at number three. He definitely is going in here feeling like number one. What an upset by Berdych over Djokovic that was. I mean, that was, you know, two sets, and that one was retired there. And Query, I've never even heard of this guy, I'm going to be completely honest, beating Andy Murray, number one, getting that hometown number one, really. And again, that was also a good matchup there. Kind of really fell apart the last two sets for Murray. So I'm curious to see what I don't even know how to say his name. Is Query? Query? I'm really excited to see what he can do. I think that's going to be really interesting. Cilic, I had him in my top four, so I'm excited to see what he can do. But Federer is really the guy to watch out for. He can really make some noise now.
Yeah, so Roger Federer, you know, he won the award last night at the ESPYs. And just looking back, I feel like when I started following tennis over many years ago, it was Federer, it was Nadal, Djokovic was not at this level that he has become now. Mm-hmm. He was in the works of, and Andy Murray was maybe a top 10, top 15 player. So you kind of had Federer and Nadal for a while. And then Federer, you felt like he kind of slumped back. He was injured for a couple years, and now coming back up again, and maybe a product of some other guy's unfortunate injuries or just
that
not making it through.
That off-the-cliff type argument maybe to have with Federer, but he's back and he's strong.
Yeah, so, you know, what do you see from him? You see him as somebody who has a while left. You see him as somebody who's rounding out his career based on the play. I know
it's hard.
I know
yeah.
It's hard to watch every match so far, but he's been very strong.
It's hard to really kind of tell his future. I do have him winning this tournament. I think by the time we come on next, me and Brandon, this will already be settled. So we'll see what happens there. We'll take picks here. But I like Federer to really win this against Berdych. And you have to look at the other side of the semifinals, too. Querrey and Kilic, two guys you don't really see that often in the limelight. And a number 24 Curie, if he can, you know, get it against the Swiss matchup here, I think this will be a really good match to watch. Again, Federer, regardless of who he plays, is going to be a good matchup, but I think I'll have Federer winning this one. I don't know about you, Teddy.
I would think so.
Yeah.
He's got to be the heavy favorite here, and at this point, he's got to be the favorite to win it all. Of course, he's still got two more to go through, but you know, he was also lucky to avoid some of the top competitors, but that's just a product of when you're number three.
Happens.
You know, you're not going to get number one or two unless they move on to the semifinals or the finals. And lucky for him, both one and two in Djokovic and Nadal are out. And so he's top one left. And you look on the other side and you say, well, he's got a good chance to win that one. Looking at the women's, Venus Williams is going to be in the finals against, I don't want to pronounce the name incorrectly, Muguruza, potentially. I'm going to check the spelling on that one. She's number 14 and Venus Williams number 10.
Mm-hmm.
That will be on Saturday, 9 a.m. That's the final. So here she goes in the final, number 10. You know, she had to upset some people. And the days of the Maria Sharapovas and some of those top players, not there anymore. A lot of names, up-and-coming names in women's tennis. Caroline Wozniacki, she did not make it through this way. And Serena, as well, not involved in this tournament. So, you know, how do you feel about what Venus has been able to do? And we talked about it over the last couple of weeks, the adversity and the personal stuff she was dealing with the auto accident down in Florida and how she's been moving through that and looking very strong so far in the tournament.
Yeah, you got to give a lot of props to Venus Williams and looking at their matches specifically. She took care of Konta pretty easily, and same with Muguruza. She also took care of Rebikova. Are these names doing us no favors at all? But again, both moving to the finals with some ease here. So I also have Venus Williams winning this matchup, but it's going to be a good one. Again, 10-14, not really seeing these 1, 2, 3, you know, top four seeded athletes, kind of these tennis athletes in these finals. But this is the kind of gritty matchups that you like to see, and I think Venus Williams is going to win this one.
What would that do for her? Not in comparison to her sister, because we know...
I mean, this was a Williams legacy.
Sure, okay, so
yeah.
Approach it from that perspective.
I mean, you said there's a lot of off the screen, behind the scenes stuff that have been going on, with not only Venus as well, but with Serena as well. So I think for the Williams sister, I think just generally, I think this is a win-win for the brand and a win-win for Venus. Also, an athlete kind of listed as off-the-cliff type person, how long does she have left? And I'm actually more curious to see how long Venus Williams can play at this level rather than Roger Federer. But I think that with this win, she'll be cemented as one of the greatest of all time. She'll never catch Serena, but you got to really appreciate what these sisters are doing.
Well, Serena said, you know, playing without or not playing in Wimbledon, Serena Williams is pregnant with her first child. She said that it's been, quote, pretty fantastic just to watch what's going on. And I think they had an interview with her yesterday, and she said, yeah, I believe that Venus can take it all the way. Now, she's in Los Angeles receiving her ESPY award, and Venus across the pond playing in the final on Saturday. So as you mentioned, it very good for both of their legacies. And if not already, I mean, is there any doubt at this point of the top duo in really any sport?
You talking about the Williams sister?
Sure, yeah.
I would have to think about it, but I, you have to give it to them right now. If you can't think of, if I can't think of anybody on top of the spot, but yeah, these, I mean, they've played doubles as well. I don't know if you've ever seen them play doubles, Teddy.
Yeah,
it's pretty filthy, but yeah, as far as tennis goes, it's a no doubter.
So the Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor fight is coming up relatively soon. It will be here before we know it.
Towards we get a ding, ding, ding?
Ding, ding, ding. Towards the end, I wish I had my bell in here.
Yeah.
Towards the end of August, and you had to educate me before the show here what's going on, because I'm on Twitter yesterday, and I'm trying to casually follow the news, and all I'm seeing are these videos and these memes with McGregor and Mayweather, and I feel like I'm completely out of the loop here. But explaining to me, you told me that they have this tour to promote the fight.
Four-city tour, yes.
Four-city tour, and they've already gone through two cities so far.
So it actually turns out they are in Brooklyn. They're live right now, I think, so they might. We'll have to catch up on that after the show. But they did Los Angeles first, then they went to Toronto, currently in Brooklyn. They did Toronto last night, but I don't know if you guys saw the fanatics, the interesting, the lines, the lingo, the shenanigans, the props. But yeah, Brooklyn now, and I think London, they might have to give a day. I don't know if they can get to London. That's a quick turnaround there. But yeah, that would be coming up either Friday or Saturday. Again, just kind of building up the hype, building up the pay-per-view, the dollars. This is all part of it. It kind of seems like these guys hate each other's guts. They don't, trust me. They're business partners, but the back and forth is great. We've saw some of the jokes, and I've loved every second of it. I'm going to obviously catch up on the Brooklyn press when I get after the show when I get home. But that's really nice to see how these guys can build up this show, and it's working. It's working for me. I want to see it even more. August 26th couldn't come soon enough.
Does this tour that both of them are having, does this change anyone's perspective, prediction on maybe who wins this fight, or is this a complete moneymaker?
This is just a complete moneymaker. I mean, it's one of those things, even the loser's not going to lose. I mean, you're looking at $100 million minimum.
For the loser?
Minimum for the loser. So, I think tactically, you can try to get into it. You know, you can look at reach, height, weight, UFC, octagon, ring. You can look at those things, and that's interesting to see. But, and both of these guys claiming they can knock each other out in the ring, I don't see that really happening. But with that being said, this is business, this is money. At the end of the day, you have to appreciate it. And my sports side of me knows that these guys don't really hate each other's guts. This is all a play for money, and it's working. And these guys they're getting into it, and they're playing their part, and I like it.
So have you seen in, you said LA and Toronto so far, right?
Correct, yes. And then Brooklyn now.
So are we talking like Staples Center, Air Canada Center?
It's been these outdoor venues, and it's kind of one of those things that's like tented in outdoor. You know how like how the NFL draft was this year? So something similar to that, not necessarily in like a Radio City Theater, you know, Staples type hall, but it's been one of those type venues.
And people are showing up.
Oh, people are showing up, and I'll put it this way right now, the Conor contingent is strong. The McGregor brand is strong right now.
Why do you think so?
I don't know. I think he brings that Irish element, that Ireland, you know, that having the flag there, and a guy, you know, switching sports really is what he's doing. And McGregor kind of coming, or excuse me, Mayweather coming out of retirement. He's 49-0. It's one of those expected things. He's not as loud. He's not as, you know, showboaty as McGregor. I think the fans like that. And I have Mayweather winning this fight, but I'm really into the process Conor McGregor is taking, because I think that whole loud, obnoxious is fun to watch. That's what I'm paying for.
Well, he's 28 years old, and what is Mayweather, 42?
He's 40, yeah.
40, so you got to excuse me for the two extra years I added on. Just a age discrepancy and a new energy coming forward, a guy changing leagues, and I feel like for a lot
of... How do you not root for that?
Sure, and maybe for a lot of people... myself, now I have a responsibility, as we all do here, to be educated on all sports, since that is our job here, to talk about sports, whether we are more connected to them naturally or not, in our past or whatever we've grown up with. But I've had to do a little bit of research here and figure out figure out the, like, UFC, MMA, and boxing and realize that there really is a whole industry here. Maybe if this doesn't get as much airtime, because these are not the same sports that are being broadcasted on ESPN or TNT, ABC. A lot of times you have to pay, what is it, $100-something pay-per-view to watch these fights. Why is the... I know we kind of talked about this back when we were on... I think it was a couple days after the news of this fight came out. Maybe the day before. So we talked about it and what this fight would mean. Why is there so much money in this industry, specifically, that will go towards this fight in comparison to maybe the other top leagues in sports?
Well, Floyd Mayweather right now is at the top of boxing. He has been, even though he's been retired. And Conor McGregor is the face of UFC. You're kind of bringing these two phenomenal powerhouses together, and this is what you're getting. The TMT, the Money Team brand, is strong, because look at it this way. Conor McGregor's highest payout was $3 million, Teddy. That was his last fight. That was his highest payout. Floyd Mayweather, he doesn't settle for less than 7-8 figures, you know, a loss or a win. So, again, now he claims himself to be the nine-digit man. He's been eyeing that $1 billion. But you put together not only sports but two entertainment industries, and you get two of the strongest guys. I mean, this is like putting, if you were to, you know, put LeBron or Curry, you know, with... I can't even think of who the biggest name in football and hockey is, and you put all three of those, or those four of those guys together, or you put together Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, and you put those two brands together, this is essentially what we're doing, and we have never seen anything like this in sports.
Nothing in sports.
I don't think, as far as branding, as far as image goes, and definitely as far as money goes, we've never seen anything like this before, Teddy.
Well, that I think is maybe the most interesting thing. Mm-hmm. The idea of the PR side, the business, the money.
Mm-hmm.
This fight is going to be how many minutes? Maybe an hour?
Yeah, you look at, you know, five-minute rounds. You look at 12 rounds. I don't know if they want to adjust that at all, but you're looking at an hour maximum, I would say, Teddy, yeah.
So an hour maximum of guys fighting, mm-hmm. and if our past history shows anything, now I'm not here trying to compare Conor McGregor to Manny Pacquiao, but we saw in that fight, really hyped up, although the hype to that, really nothing to do with the hype to this. Mm-hmm. Totally different. There wasn't a lot of fighting. It was a lot of hopping around, and they didn't actually throw that many punches. So the fight, and tell me if I'm off out of line here, the fight may not actually be much for this. It is the build-up to the fight, and now that is...
Oh, absolutely. This fight could be a complete dud.
Well, that's why you mentioned back when the release date for the fight came out, you said, I'm surprised that there's not a little bit more time.
Yeah.
Is it for reasons like this, for more promotional advance build-up hype for the fight?
Yeah, but then at the same time, you don't want to just kind of keep the crowd hanging. I think there's 4 days and four promotional tours, really, in four cities in four or five days, whatever. I think that's really what it is. They're kind of just hitting you with that interest in a bang. So I think the date is okay. I personally, again, I would have... This is a November, October, September fight for me, but... late August, I think that this is interesting. Again, you lock up that new T-Mobile arena in Las Vegas, so you have to put all of that together, and this is what you get. But yeah, that's what this is, just a promotional and interested in a hype up play is all it is.
If they had one of these up in Philly, Wilmington, would you go?
Are you talking about these two guys?
I'm talking about these hyped up events. If you lived in Toronto, you would go.
Of course, you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially, you know, being in Delaware. Nobody really comes to Delaware, so.
John Cena's coming to Delaware.
Oh, yeah.
Remember I texted you about that back about a month ago.
WWE,
Can
we get press passes for that?
Boxing, fake there? Fighting, etc. It will actually be the day after I come back from my vacation. Monday the 24th, so it's about a week and a half, John Cena from WWE is coming to the Bob Carpenter Center here in Newark. The tickets range from $15 to $100. There's this whole briefing on what's going to be happening, who's fighting, et cetera, et cetera. You didn't really seem like that was your thing.
No, not me personally.
You want the real fight.
I want free tickets. If I can get free tickets, I'm going anywhere.
Hey, we can reach out for credentials.
Maybe. Let's make it happen, Teddy.
I want to talk about the Olympics for a second, because there was news the other day after a vote by the International Olympic Committee on Tuesday, and they basically said that the two winners in the Summer Games bidding race will be Los Angeles and Paris. So this means that 2024 is going to be to one city, and 2028 is going to be to the other. And South California, now Los Angeles, this would be the third time that it would go there for Paris. This would be the second. So looking at this, now the U.S., I mean, has been trying to get the Olympics back for a while, and I don't think they've had it for a long time. You were looking back south, Salt Lake City, and we've been around different places. They finally get it back, and there was a very interesting piece in the New York Times that Brandon sent us about how this... The selection of the Olympics to Paris and the U.S. fits in with whole politics and what's been going on there, and I don't want to get into all of that because I know that that's a very heated conversation these days, and one of our rules, one of our standards here on the show is we won't talk about politics, right? We will tell you how it relates to athletics, but we are not a political show, and we won't get into all of that. But, you know, not to skate around it, but to look at these two cities right now, Los Angeles and Paris, for the Olympics 2024 and 2028 overall, like, excited for the U.S.? How do you feel about that? Is this a good thing, correct?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can get that vote, and then it's great for the country, great for the economy. It's one of those things that we have the infrastructure, we have the capability, the means to do it. We've seen it in other cities and other countries, and we're seeing what's happening in like Rio right now as far as like their city and infrastructure and the economy that, and how much debt they're in. It's something that I think the U.S., I guess, deserves, and something that they can make happen. I think it's good for not only that region, but for the country as a whole. It's a really good pickup anytime you can have that happen. And quite a few years now that it's coming back.
So what this article in the New York Times is saying is that to look at what France did in their election with that they rejected the far right candidate Marine Le Pen, and then U.S. of course elected Donald Trump, and the popularity of the U.S. globally at this point has gone down with the political regime, and that's not opinionated. That is being written in a number of articles. Many people will say we're looking at fake sources here, but based on what has been studied and what has been put out over these last several months, is that U.S. popularity worldwide has gone down a little bit, but with Olympics, it goes up because you are then recruiting and you are hosting an overall international event. How do you feel about the role of the Olympics in a country's ability to not to sway people towards liking them, but to a country's overall favorability? We've seen over the last couple of years, whether we were in Russia, whether we were in Rio, all of these places where the Olympics have been, those places thrived economically, globally, and what they've been able to do, the success for their country. How do you feel like it fits in with maybe France, the U.S., two countries who have been involved in a lot recently?
Well, it's hard because right now I think a lot of Americans and myself included want to, you know, have a little bit of distinction of the two, whether it's the government or the office and our political views and sports. And I don't necessarily know how other countries are feeling about, you know, coming to America or maybe the position of America. But we can't represent anyone, and we can't talk for everyone. So it's difficult, especially you said with now the Trump administration being in office. So it's something that you have to distinctify the two and see how you can bring these sports in other countries together. Because like you said, we do have a great contingency outside of the U.S. and we do a great job of representing the U.S. in other Summer Olympics, Winter Olympics, whatever it is, outside, internationally, globally. So it's hard to distinctify, I guess, for me personally. It's what other people think about the U.S. and how their standing is with our country. And again, I can't speak for everyone. I can't represent anyone here, but that's just how it is.
So at this point, they're saying that some experts from this article that I'm referencing from the New York Times, some experts are saying that L.A. has a better chance of hosting 2024 than Paris because of financial issues that may go on in Paris. at this moment could scare off the future cities. So Paris is still working through, because now it costs millions of dollars, even upwards of $1 billion or $2 billion to host the Olympics. So that's why when you pay that much to host the Olympics, it's a risk for you personally, but there are benefits in what you can do with the country, and it pays off for your infrastructure and for your economy and having everybody in. I mean, just look at what went on down there in Rio the past couple of years, and that's a place that, I mean, this is very recent. The Olympics, what was that? That would have been 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio. And down there, that's a place, you know, they were having all their problems with the Zika virus.
Yeah.
So they had problems with the Zika virus and a lot of athletes saying they weren't going to go. However, the country as a whole in Brazil and their economy absolutely exploded from the direct benefits of having some things like that. So you see the positives of there, but you can also see the difficulties in with the political landscapes with these cities. But an interesting note that was going on with these Olympic cities, and we don't know which one is going to be where yet. 2024, one city, 2028 in the other city, both LA and Paris. But it's been a while, and for Paris, what they're saying here is it's been years and years and years since it's been there. It's been 1924 was the last time that Paris hosted. So we're talking a good 100 years since it was there. So overall, continuing to work through that, but Summer Olympics 2024, 2028 in these two cities overall. Any final word there before we move on?
No, I mean, you also have to look at the Paris climate as well. They're not in the greatest position. They're, you know, doing good things, but it's still, things are also a little, you know, hot over there as well. So we'll see what happens, and hopefully for the better coming 2024 and 2028.
As we continue to move through these summer months, only a few weeks to go before a lot of stuff gets back in business, including most of Delaware athletics. Most of the freshmen did move in the other day, though, Amid. Women's basketball freshmen are here. And a note, all, you know how we debated that Natasha Adair might lose some of the recruits that Tina Martin recruited?
Right.
Well, they only lost one, and it was the most highly, not contested, but the one that there was a lot of buildup with. Katie Kane, mm-hmm. The one who was, she was 6'5". She didn't end up coming, but still three of the other four recruits came. So they're back in action here. They're getting practice going. Volleyball's getting their practice going. Football's going to start very soon. And men's soccer are going to start very soon as well. Their schedule released yesterday, and it's a pretty challenging schedule. This is the defending CAA champion, Blue Hen soccer team, led by Coach Ian Hennessy. A very good season, a season that they upset some people in that tournament to go on and win it, and then go into the NCAA tournament, a very competitive matchup against Providence there. So when we look at the schedule, Amid, there's going to be a number.
I'm pulling it up now.
Yeah, huh? Pulling it up right now. there's going to be some good conference matchups and some good out-of-conference matchups as well. They'll open up exhibition-wise on the road against George Mason and St. Joseph's on August 16th and 20th. The home opener is on Monday, August 28th against Bryant, and then their second game at home on August 31st, Thursday, versus Temple, 2 p.m. So that game will be at 2 p.m., and we will have our live show at 5, football game at 7. So lots of action on Thursday the 31st. And then they'll get some good matchups against Big East teams, Villanova, Seton Hall, before we get back into the conference schedule, UNC Wilmington, Northeastern Drexel, etc. So overall, you don't change too much, but they do get a matchup against Duke at the end, towards the end of October. So a pretty challenging schedule, but nothing too crazy for Coach Hennessy.
Not at all. You get your two games, really, your exhibition games. Those are going to be good in Virginia and Philadelphia with GMU and St. Joe's. So kind of really get to see, also having that away, kind of set the tone, really. You get off to a really good start with two home games right here, 28 and the 31st. You know, if you're Delaware fan, Delaware resident, you know, just come out, support. Tickets are free. Hopefully we'll get a chance to be there. Temple one, we won't be able to make it. That's the first game. Football game of the year, so that unfortunately we'll be covering that. But two games, get out to a good start. You know, you look at these teams, you can easily get off to a nice start here, a nice 3-1, 4-1, 5-2 type start. So not a favorable schedule, but definitely a doable, manageable schedule. But like you said, Teddy, this is one of the more tougher ones we've seen in the past years, I think. But tournament's going to be played at the highest seed, so let's see what they can do. They had that in the palm of their hands last year, but that just slipped away.
Blue Hens men's soccer team losing Guillermo Delgado and Thomas De Villardi, both who graduated and both went on to, well, Delgado went on to go into the draft and second-round draft pick for Villardi. So those two guys moving on to bigger and better things in the world of soccer. But they're going to return some other players, too, most notably first-team All-CAA goaltender Todd Morton, who will be back for the Hens. And then they have some quality juniors, midfielder Rob Gillen and defender John Schroeder, who we talked to last year on the show. How do you feel like they're going to be able to respond to the absence of a guy like Delgado and Villardi and De Villardi as well, a team that is going to get younger but at the same time still have some veterans? How do you respond to losing those star players?
It's tough, and the schedule's not doing you any favor. We've seen a lot of the things happening around the athletic department, so it's tough, but you have to just keep focused. I think the school does a great job of recruiting, and we'll see how well that can pay off for them. But we've seen it with most of the sports. It's how you hit the ground running. It's how you acclimate the freshmen, and it's how you put together your best team and your best product on the field. It's been on and off for the UD Blue Hens, but soccer, they've done it. They've sent guys to the MLS. They've had talent. They've lost close games. They won close games. They won game winners. We saw this team literally do everything and anything, Teddy. So this is going to be a fun team to watch. I don't see them being better than they were last year, but I do see them still a fun team to be around and to cover this year.
For the Delaware football team specifically now, they bring in a transfer in J.P. Caruso. Before they did that, head coach Danny Rocco said that Joe Walker was the starting quarterback. Caruso is a guy that's got some experience at Appalachian State. Joe Walker, a lot of people think what we've seen from him is what we're going to get from him. Looking at that quarterback position right now and understanding that the Blue Hens have a talented and deep running back core, they have a good group of guys in the backfield and a decent group of wide receivers and a pretty good offensive line now. What do you see happening over these next couple weeks as we get into practice? Is that job up for grabs? Does Caruso at this point have the edge over it, or is it Walker's to lose?
Walker's to lose.
That's how you would approach this.
Absolutely. It's Walker's to lose. I mean, I think Brandon, he made up a, you know, good case scenario. Obviously, he's not on the coaching staff, but I hope they're listening because, you know, you got a tough game coming up with Virginia Tech, and that's kind of right off the bat. So you see how he does there. And you give him maybe a 2-3 game, you know, a quick leash and see what he can do. And then you bring in Caruso if that needs to happen. But I think the setup is there. The schedule is favorable. And I think that whatever happens, happens. And it's Joe Walker's to lose, and he gets to start. But that doesn't mean he'll get majority of the games. We'll see what happens. But I have a feeling that he's not finishing the season, Teddy.
Walker is not finishing the
correct
season.
I have a feeling he won't be as a starter.
Well, you look at this team right now, and there's not a lot of change. They only lose a couple players from last season. And sooner or later, we expect to really start to know who is going to be in these positions, because the first game, whether this sounds crazy or not, the first game for Delaware football, I'm going to do a little counting here for a second, 7 weeks from right now. And 7 weeks from right now is the home opener for Delaware football. So it's real quick. They're going to start camp soon enough, and it's a really talented defense. Do you see anything that really you can point to besides the quarterback position for this team as some notes that we're going to keep an eye on as we get into camp, as areas that need to be improved besides that quarterback position?
I don't know if it's an area that needs to be improved, but I've been saying this since the second the season ended last year. I want to see what the wide receiving and the tight end crew can do. I think that's important. We saw flashes of brilliance in the blue-gold game. It was, I don't want to say brilliance, but, you know, we saw some flashes. So if that team can get together, I mean, 90 yards, how many yards is he averaging per game? Not that many. So you're looking at under 100 yards, it's kind of pathetic, you could say. So what they can do there got a nice plethora of running backs. So if the running, if the wide receivers and the tight ends can get going, they have some big names there. If they can get going and start carrying that team, it'll be start being more competitive. And I think that's really what you're looking for in a coach's first year. It's competitiveness. I expect it to go 10-0, 11-0, but you want to look at competitive games and you want to obviously feel confident that you are way better than you were last year.
Well, you know what Coach Rocco said when we had him on our show and we were live at Arenas.
Very articulate, by the way. Very articulate in his answers and thoughtful.
We asked him, we said, you have a schedule where you're going to face the defending FCS champion, JMU. You're going to face your former team, Richmond. You're going to face a Villanova team that you always seem to have problems with. You're going to face Virginia Tech, an ACC powerhouse on the road. And you're going to face some competition in Stony Brook and Albany and Towson, for example, that you've struggled with over the last couple of years. How do you approach that, and how do you communicate the difficulty or the not schedule being, I guess, not difficult to your team? And you know what he said? He said, you have to be able to explain, you have to be able to study the schedule, and then you have to be able to explain it to your guys that regardless of what it is, it's a good schedule. And you have to develop strategies that will help you look at it as a good schedule. And it's just the mindset and the attitude that he brought in. So he's not looking at this as, oh, we have to face JMU or Virginia Tech. It's more of a, we're going to face them. Let's figure out what strategies we can go through to maybe make those games competitive. But it's a very good mindset, mm-hmm. and you have to think that's got to hopefully rub off on the team.
I got that Richmond game highlighted. Is that at home? Is that a home game?
That is a home game.
For University of Delaware?
It'll be here, yeah.
That's going to be good. That's going to be fun to watch.
Now, you think somebody like Richmond, a team that loses a couple of seniors, that's a team that suddenly you may see fall off. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw what Rocco did, Liberty and Richmond.
Yeah.
Even a team, JMU, they're defending national
championship. I don't think people understand how nice of a schedule this is. This is going to be very interesting.
Well, I say JMU because that's a team that was really good, but they lose their starting quarterback and their starting running back, mm-hmm. who were by far their top two players to graduation. They lose both of them. And besides JMU, Richmond, and Virginia Tech, everybody else on the schedule right now you have to look at and say, there is no reason we should not be competitive in these games. So again, like you said, I'm not sitting here saying, as we are on July 13th, without knowing what the depth chart is or anything, that this is a schedule for Delaware football that they should expect to go, 9-2? No, I'm not saying that. But I am saying that this is a schedule that, as Rocco said, you have to look at it and say that it's a good one. Because there's only one team in here that, I mean, JMU debatable, but they lose their top two players. And I think that counts for something.
I really do.
And Charles Scarf, don't forget, during the spring game, he had a really nice game, and they have some good young wide receivers in Gene Coleman and Joey Carter who had positive impacts. And don't forget about the defense, Amit. I mean, this is a really good defense.
Yeah, and this team is going to be better, but they have to show that they can really take that jump and really improve. Not too much pressure should be on Coach Rocco, so this should be a good season. Not as much pressure to really just go out and just flat out play some football. Just play some good football, and hopefully we can get some of these guys, some of these coaches really on the show, and I'm really excited for that moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's not that much that could go worse after the past couple seasons with what they had. What was it? The number of yards that Walker had been averaging per game and the tough losses that this team coughed up towards the end. So overall, you're right. Very excited to get this team started. And only 7 weeks from today, and we expect over these next couple weeks to get players onto the show, maybe get Chrissy back on the show, talk about this upcoming team and everybody else and all these other fall teams at work now. A lot of new eras. Football, a new era. Volleyball, a new era. Women's soccer, a new era. They'll get underway. And men's soccer with Coach Hennessy, it's a new era because you lose all pro or all collegiate athlete in Guillermo Delgado to the MLS. So there's a lot of new changes in the department.
Almost the rebuild there, yeah.
Almost a rebuild. No, they have players, like veterans.
They have
they'll deal
players,
with.
Yeah.
But when you lose somebody like that, you have to approach it. Who is going to be those guys that are going to work with you? But overall, I think we've talked about this theme a lot. A lot of change, but a new breath of energy that's come into this athletic department. And, you know, over these next couple weeks before we get into September, very excited to see how they train, what these teams are going to look like.